So as Rob said, we're going to be talking about the character of God and God as mother. And that's what the original title of the message was. And as we were putting things together, I decided to do God as dot, dot, dot. God as ellipsis point. To highlight that God is beyond metaphors. God transcends metaphors, and God is... I'm trying not to use the pronoun. My notes all throughout, I have no pronouns in there. I only have God. And I've already got off the rails the first two sentences. God is beyond metaphor, beyond pronouns, beyond on things. And the only way we're able to approach God in talking about God is metaphors and similes and analogies in this revelation when we talk about who God is. And I want to focus in on Hosea 11 and shape the conversation around this passage and highlight how God is revealed as mother in this text. And God is revealed as father quite strongly, especially in the New Testament, where in the way that Jesus talks about his relationship with God, God is his father, and how he teaches us to pray. And that's a big, dominant, appropriate image of who God is. In the Old Testament, there's far less references to God as father. There's actually only a handful of texts which specifically refer to God as mother. And to begin, I want to share a quote from a conclusion of somebody's study on Hosea 11, just to frame the conversation a little bit, and to challenge us to think of God as beyond the image of father, and to think of God as mother, but to think of how these point to something even bigger, something beyond that. So this is from Brigitte Seifert, and she writes here, those who reject or can't even come to the idea that God handles himself in this situation in Hosea 11 like a mother, they must ask themselves what ideology moves them to this or specifically hinders them from being able to do this. But also, on the other side, those who are only able to see God acting as mother and then shut out, or the German word that is used in this text is to basically to play off the stage type of thing, in a play thing, ausspielen, and play the image of father completely out of the text, are likely suffering from the same ideology that hinders the person before, just in the opposite way. It would be wonderful and something to strive for to be able to talk about God and to discover the image of mother in a new way without at the same time forcing out the image of father. Hosea 11 can help us in this and to realize that God isn't contained in either of the two images, in either of the two sets of way of understanding God. That was a very loose translation of this German passage. So Hosea 11 is a picture we're going to look at this text. It's on page 1373 in your pew Bibles, but I've chosen to read from the New Revised Standard Version, and it'll be on the screen. I do want to first talk about a couple other things to help us out. And I know that not all of you, but many of you would have a Facebook page. There's many who are holdouts from this aspect of social media, but it's in culture enough that people would understand what a Facebook profile page represents. And on that page, there is information about the person. It highlights a few things about them, perhaps the best burger they've ever eaten or the things that they're interested in. But these are only small pictures, small signposts to who that person is, and you can't fully understand who that person is by looking at their Facebook page. I won't say that God's Facebook page is the Bible in any stretch, but it's just a picture to help us understand how the language and the image language of God helps us to point to something beyond. And it's not contained in each one image, but it's a collage, it's a collection of images. And I think of an overhead projector from back in the day, and how you had all those different plastic pages with, and some, if you could stack a whole pile of them and then shine light through and then see them, you can, but if you put like 10 different ones, you could then see like this image form. And the picture of God that we receive in the text is one as if we have all these different foils stacked on one another, the image of father and mother, king, judge, lord, savior. And some are predominant, or warrior, I guess would mean over savior. But like those type of things are all stacked on and give us this full picture of who God is. And this helps us understand God revealed to us in the world and in our lives. So I'm going to read Hosea 11, 1 to 9. If you'd like to follow along in the New Living Translation, that's fine. You'll be able to see maybe why I've picked this translation at a couple points. And I'll explain it as we go. When Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Egypt, I called my son. The more I called them, the more they went from me. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and offering incense to idols. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up in my arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I bent down to them and fed them. They shall return to the land of Egypt, and Assyria shall be their king, because they have refused to return to me. The sword rages in their cities. It consumes their oracle priests and devours because of their schemes. My people are bent on turning away from me. To the high they call, but he does not raise them up at all. How can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboim? My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim. For I am God and no mortal, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. This message, as we go through the exegesis, is a little bit more technical than I try to have things, but it's important to kind of set all the parameters and why and how the images come out in Hosea and why this interpretation of God as mother makes sense. Just a bit of background in Hosea. As you can guess from this text, the people of Israel are rebellious people, and this message is both to Israel and Judah to warn them to return to God, to heed his call and trust in him. And it comes at kind of the turn of the height of Israel and their kingdom. And they're caught between these two superpowers, Egypt and Assyria. And they're deciding to put their trust, their loyalty, the way that they bind themselves to these two political forces. And it's going to backfire on them, as history shows us. And God is calling to the people and saying, return to him. Don't worship foreign deities, the Baals. Don't put your trust in Egypt or Assyria. Trust in me. Have a relationship with me. I'm the one who called you originally out of Egypt and made you my people. Trust in me. And this is the longing, the call that reverberates all throughout the text of Hosea. And the time frame is similar to the time of Amos or the time of the beginning of Isaiah. It's a similar sort of time frame with Assyria as the main power. So often I talk about something called text or Old Testament text criticism, and even I don't normally use that name. I don't know if I have used that name before, but I talk about it sometimes with the best text or how to translate a specific verse or specific idea. And if you did open up your Pew Bibles to the New Living Translation, you will see a footnote in verse 2, and it says that the Greek text has I, where the Hebrew text has we, for the more I called them, it's more, or the more they called, sorry, not we. It's in Hebrew, it's they, the more they called. And based upon the Greek translation of the Old Testament, the NRSV, which I read from, and the New Living Translations, thinks this should be I. It makes more sense in the context. And the process by which they come to these decisions is about a whole lot of different factors. But this is called Old Testament textual criticism, and it's an important part. And there's the texts we have are very good received texts, and we can trust their authority and their witness to God. But sometimes there's reason to translate in a way that another text would be translated, or another translation like Greek or Hebrew or Latin or Aramaic or so on. And these are often in the footnotes in the New Living Translation and other texts. And I say this because I want to talk about Hosea 11:4 and the process of text criticism that went on there. It could be translated in two different ways, and it's highlighted in the New Revised Standard Version and the New Living Translation. And the difference would be who lifts infants to their cheeks is how the New Revised Standard Version has it. And the New Living Translation reflects the received Hebrew text is, I lifted the yoke from his neck. And there is a difference in imagery when you consider the two different ways of translating the text. What it comes down to is the consonants that are right here in Hebrew. It's an ayin and a lamed. The Hebrew text, in the time that it was written without vowel points, and those were only added later by the Masoretes in the 7th, 8th century after Christ. So the New Living Translation points to the common interpretation that was done in those Hebrew schools and copying scribal communities. But sometimes when you just have the consonantal text, it could point to a different word, and the same consonants would point to the words infants as being that. And so the idea with infants is this guardian figure picking up a child and lifting them close to their cheek, just like the picture that Rob had at the end with the mother, as a child being held on the shoulder close to the cheeks and being cared for and loved and embraced in that respect. And the idea of guardian to child, that part has already come out in Hosea at the beginning with Hosea 11 verse 1, this out of Israel I've called my child, and this image is already present in the text. The other image, the image of yoke in the Hebrew text, would shift more into animal imagery, where you have a caring farmer who then uses their animal and takes the yoke, but then takes the yoke off of them to care for them, to restore them, and then stooping to feed them fits both options, both ideas. And we have imagery for both throughout Hosea, both caring farmer type of imagery and guardian parent type of imagery. So both options work and make sense. And there's actually even an argument that this actually strengthens the motherly image based upon ancient Near Eastern mythology and background, which I won't get into today, but I'd be happy to point you to that if you're interested in that. And it makes sense, or it's almost fortuitous in the way that these two images point in good ways, in comforting ways, to a God who would respond to needs in both ways, to lessen the burden from an animal and then feed them and care for them to make sure that they receive the care that they need, or a guardian who picks the child up to their cheek, holds them close, embraces them, and then feeds them at the same time, provides for sustenance, care, love, and nurture. Both images point very strongly to a God whose love is very strong and who cares very much for God's people. Now, I favor the translation of the New Revised Standard Version. That's partly because of verse 7. And at first glance, it might not make sense completely to, and I think it's a couple slides beyond. That's the Hebrew, and then one more. The reason why isn't here. It might not come out at first glance, but to the New Living Translation, New Living and then NRSV, both translate this, if you look at the second to last line, to the Most High they call. And there is some good argument for understanding this differently. And this helps with the background in the context of Hosea, people, or the people in the time of Hosea being caught between the great powers of Egypt and Assyria. We have in the second block there, and Assyria shall be their king. We have the imagery of the one who lifts up, and this verb is then echoed in the second part with raises. It's the same Hebrew verb, and it seems to be in conversation with one another, the earlier verse 4 and verse 7 here. And so there is good argument to see this, the high one, or the lifted up one here, instead of being the Most High, which often people understand that to be referring to God, but instead of being referring to the Assyrian king. I'm going to read something written by Marvin Sweeney. It is most likely refers to the Assyrian king referred to in verse 5 with the pronoun he. They will call him. He will not deliver the people in their time of distress. The statement together, he will not raise them, which is in verse 4, indicates a wordplay that recalls the image of Mother Yahweh raising the suckling Israel for feeding in verse 4. Most interpreters take together, it's not reflected in the translation very well, together as a reference to the entire nation. The Assyrian king will not do to the nation Israel what Mother Yahweh has done for Israel, the child. The image here is of a small child, and I'm sure this is a common image of the small child lifting their hands up to their parents, saying, pick me up, pick me up, pick me up, pick me up. And Hosea is highlighting is that no matter how often they call for that nurturing, caring, loving picture or image of care to the Assyrian kings, to the ones that they have connected themselves with, they won't pick them up, they won't love them and nurture them the way that God will, the way that God will care for the people. And I think this image fits, and I think it fits well with the text, and it makes sense of this God who will not abandon the people over to destruction, will extend grace to them, will extend love to them, this compassion that exceeds. Marvin Sweeney also points to the background, or possible background to this text, is being Deuteronomy 21, 18 to 21. And this is the law that if there is a man, Ish in Hebrew, if there is this case of a rebellious child, that they're supposed to take the child out and stone the child. And this is in Deuteronomy as one of the laws. And he says this: if we read that text in the background of this text, we have a picture of God who is unwilling to give over the rebellious child, his people, or God's people, Israel and Judah, over to destruction. God will not do this. He will not abandon the people of Israel to complete destruction. Instead, God is filled with compassion. God is filled with love, and he's able to control himself. He's able to pull back. He's able to embrace that child that's calling to be picked up and raise that child to God's cheeks out of love. This is the image of a God whose love extends beyond all human bounds. It transcends what we understand about love, what we understand about care, about mercy, about grace. This is the image of God as the loving mother who raises the child up to the cheeks and cares for them with a warm embrace of love. God's love transcends and is beyond metaphor, and that's the title I would like to kind of put out there. I'm going to put it as ellipsis point, but God's love transcends metaphor. It transcends our understanding of what a father is, even a good father. It transcends our understanding of what a good mother is. But those images, those metaphors, those analogies help us to understand that loving embrace that we can receive from our God in love, intimacy, care, protection, sustenance, nourishment, grace. I want to read a quote from my dissertation supervisor, and he wrote a little section on this, which I had already planned to talk about God as mother, and then I came across something that he wrote on specifically this passage, and my understanding of verse 7, he actually in his translation supports that as well, so I'm in good company, I guess. And so this is his quote: "The Holy One, who is chiefly and even beyond world and humanity, beyond male and female, the incomparable other." This text of Hosea concerns the godliness of God, and any measuring stick, whether it be in a male image or in a female image, fails to capture this. God is the Holy One, the absolute Holy One, as is referred to in Isaiah. And Hosea brings out this image in a powerful new way. God is not contained with even just being the mysterious one from a religious history, but even more so, he is the Holy One who is in the middle. He's not some distant God. He's a God in the middle and the presence of the people's life. He is able to bring back his anger and control it. His comfort extends, and his will to bring about reconciliation is very strong. God's holiness and his love is set through and established even in the midst of rebellious humanity. For Hosea, men and women can learn about speaking correctly to and about God, and understanding the paradox that only in metaphor, here in fatherly and also motherly images, that ability to speak about God is possible. And that at the same time, there is no metaphor for God's work and his character where we completely can control him or box him in. God's love transcends metaphor. It's beyond our ability to box in and to limit to a specific text, specific image. The point of Hosea, the background of Hosea, is this love that transcends, this love that moves in the middle of it, of the people, and restores all things to them. I can't help but think of Exodus 34, verse 6, and that was on the bulletin, Yahweh, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. And although, as this text in Exodus continues, there is judgment, but the comparison between his longing for mercy and his longing for judgment is so ridiculous that mercy is elevated as God's essential way of relating to his, or to God's humanity, to God's people. He's unwilling to abandon his people. He doesn't give up on them. He loves them. He extends mercy to them. He gives them grace. The reason I wanted to discuss this image, to look at God as mother, is to add a fuller picture about God's love, God's embrace, God's way of never giving up on his people. Even in this text, God's people are continually running away, completely trying to abandon the way that God sets out for them to live. But God, in his mercy, in his grace and his love, extends beyond that, continues to pursue them out of love, longs to pick them up, embrace them, bring them back to him. Hope to establish a wider picture of who God is, a fuller image of God's love and mercy. God meets us no matter where we're at, no matter what situation we're in, no matter what place we find ourselves, with love, grace, mercy, trust. Even if we're rebelling, even if we feel far off, this is the image of God, the one who reaches down to feed us, to care for us, to lift us up from the places of difficulty, to comfort us, to hug us. The language points to something beyond, something that is even beyond our full understanding of who God is. But these pictures point us in that direction, point us to that understanding, and allow us to encounter God in these images, in these ways. Symbols are the same, use the same function in our worship life. They point us to something real, something beyond what we're able to fully encounter. And that's why each week we come and encounter this merciful, loving, forgiving, graceful God in the table elements, in the bread and the cup. The things that Jesus gave to us as the fullest picture of God, and the picture of who Jesus is as he gives over his life for our redemption, for our reconciliation to God, our ability to then approach him in love and care and grace and mercy, and to be embraced by his love, his grace. We're able to each week come and tear off a piece of the bread and dip it in the cup and allow that to be an encounter with this God who stoops down to give us love, to pick us up, and to restore us. Each week we're able to come and experience this transcendent love, which transcends metaphor, which is even beyond our understanding. We're invited to this table to move into one of those thin places, one of those close connection points, where God is made just a little bit more real in this world, where the encounter become just that little bit more close. So I invite you to come tonight and tear off a piece of the bread and dip it in the cup and experience some of that transcendent love which fills us, restores, makes us whole.